Random House Audio presents Ancestor by Scott Sigler. This is the author, Scott Sigler. Four and a half years before the Novozym incident in Greenland. That smell. It wouldn't go away, and she couldn't get used to it, not even after the months and months she'd been here. A combined smell of ammonia, urine, and feces. Did hopelessness have a smell? If so, that smell was mixed in with the other things. A smell so powerful she couldn't ignore it, even as she stared at the big orange spider on the wall, even as the big orange spider on the wall stared back at her. Even in her worst moments, moments just like this, with the smell and the spider, she knew she had it better than most. Unlike some of the patients, those that were too far gone, or those that were enemies of the state, the doctors at Lanai Mental Hospital were actually trying to help her. Trying and failing. Bloated, squishy orange body. Hairy orange legs that spread out wider than a dinner plate. A thing like that would eat a tarantula for breakfast. She was on her back, in her bed, that was pressed up against the wall on her left. The spider was on that wall, not far above her exposed feet. The orange spiders liked to chew on her toes, nasty orange fangs sinking in, hurting her, killing her, trying to make her scream. Trying and succeeding. She fought to control her fear, but that was like trying to control the ragged breaths that went in and out way too fast. She wanted to close her eyes and will it away, but each time she did close her eyes, she opened them to see that the spider had not gone away, but had instead crawled a little bit closer. Soon, it would scuttle forward, attack her toes, and Jeanne couldn't run, couldn't bat it away. Hard to run when you're shackled to the bed. Hard to swat at something when the straitjacket blocks your every move. The spider wasn't there. It wasn't really there. They told her that over and over again. A hallucination. Why couldn't they do something about that smell? Why? They had given her new medication. They said it would work. In truth, she hadn't seen the green rats or the purple centipedes, so maybe it was working a little, but the big orange spiders kept appearing. Why couldn't they let her out of the institution? She had so many ideas, so many. She had to get to her computer, lose herself in the world of keys and screens and numbers and letters and C and G and A and T. The spiders wouldn't bother her there. No green rats, no purple centipedes. Did that mean she was getting better? The spider wasn't real. They told her that over and over again. A hallucination. Maybe the medicine was working. Maybe she could make the orange spider go away. But if she closed her eyes, it would come closer. But if she got better, she could leave, go back to her computer, to her studies. She could smell fresh air again. She stared at the big orange spider on the wall. The big orange spider on the wall stared back at her. She closed her eyes and willed it to go away. She held her breath, then opened her eyes. And then she peed herself. The orange spider was on her foot. Bigger than her foot, big as her shin and foot together, she felt its pointy claws digging through her pajamas into her skin, and it hurt. Its venom-dripping fangs poised over her middle toe. The big orange spider looked at her. She looked back at the big orange spider. Her breath came faster and faster. It wanted her to scream, to panic, to lose herself to the fear, but if she did scream, the doctors would come with the needles, and she would be in the one place even worse than the spiders and the smell. She would be in the place of darkness, the place where she had no thoughts at all. Go away, go away, go away, you are not real. They tell me this over and over, you are not real. The big orange spider did not go away. Instead, it sank its fangs into her middle toe, the points punching in at the base of her nail. She kicked and thrashed, trying not to scream, moving her foot the few inches allowed by the shackle, but the big orange spider clung tight, its disgusting, bloated body resting on the top of her foot, its claws digging deeper into her skin. She felt its belly hair on her skin. The orange fangs drove deeper, all the way through her toenail and the flesh beneath, to punch into the tiny toe bone. She tasted blood, her blood, from her tongue, and she tried not to scream because they would stick her and fill her with chemicals, and she would be trapped in the land of no thoughts, but it was a spider biting her toe. Why couldn't they see it was real, real, real? It was real. They were wrong. Liu Zhandan screamed. She screamed so loud, the blood in her mouth sprayed up and rained down tiny red droplets on her face. She screamed, she kicked. She fought against the monster on her foot and the pain, and she wanted to go home. She wanted to go back to her computers and lose herself in the numbers and the letters. She heard the door open. She heard footsteps. She felt a piece of her toe ripped off, the spider's dinner. Then she felt strong hands holding her down, the cool wipe of alcohol on her arm, the sting of needles even bigger than the spider fangs sinking into her arm, the cool chill of a foreign substance spreading through her veins, taking her under, killing her thoughts. As she faded away, the last thing on her mind was the offensive air in her nose. That smell. That horrible, horrible smell. Two years and 4 months before the Novozyme incident in Greenland. Galina Poroskova looked a little paranoid. She also looked a little pissed. A tiny thing, maybe 5'4", standing up. The low-slung wicker chair brought the cafe tabletop almost to her sternum. Wide, round sunglasses, a blue headscarf covering brunette hair, and a lipstick-stained cigarette held delicately between two fingers that angled toward the summer sky. Paul Fisher wondered if the girl was old enough to remember Jackie O, or if that was just a logical look for a woman trying to be incognito. If that was her intent, she had failed miserably. Her outfit drew more stares than if she'd just shown up in a tank top and jeans like all the other young women at the outdoor cafe. This whole trip was probably just a waste of time, but there were worse ways to kill an afternoon. At least a visit to Vancouver got him out of Maryland for a day or two and let him see the local sights. He walked toward her table, taking in those sights along the way. Something about an outdoor cafe in summer seemed to bring out the girls. The ink on Paul's divorce wasn't even dry, but hey, it never hurt to look. Looking, however, brought on a sense of melancholy. These fashion-conscious 20-somethings weren't interested in an old army divorcee who walked with a cane. Besides, the first thing he thought of when he saw these young women wasn't what they would be like in bed. It was if they were the kind of girls his son would like. Nothing marks a man's age like shifting from a lascivious voyeur to a matchmaker. He walked by a beautiful redhead reading a Cosmopolitan magazine, then a black girl with cornrows that couldn't have been more than 19, then... Paul looked away, his face turning red. The tall, strawberry blonde sitting with a cup of tea had seen him looking, caught his eye, and smiled at him. She was only two tables away from Galina. Paul hurried past. He stopped at Galina's table. "Miss Poroskova?" She looked up at him, then down at his walking cane, then back up at his face. "Since when do you walk with a cane?" A strange question. Had he met her before? "About 9 months or so. Some ongoing knee surgery. Sometimes I use it, sometimes I don't. Just depends on the day." She leaned closer and looked at it. "What is that on the handle?" He held it up a little, out a little, for her to get a closer look at the brass handle. "It's a bulldog." Obviously it was a bulldog, and it looked a lot like his dog Linnaeus. Paul's son had bought the cane as a gift, something to put at least a little fun in the long process of knee surgery recovery. The woman reached out to touch the bulldog handle, as if to see if it was real, then gestured across the table to the empty chair. Paul sat, noticing that the tabletop was scattered with a newspaper, her purse, a pack of cigarettes, a lighter, a half-empty coffee cup, and a crumb-dotted plate. Considering the methodical caution with which she'd contacted him and set up this meeting, he'd expected everything about her would be as equally organized. "You came alone?" she said. Paul Fisher smiled. "Of course, that's what you asked. I'm really not used to this cloak-and-dagger stuff, Miss Poroskova."
"Galina," she said. "Call me Galina, and don't play the country boy act with me, Mr. Fisher."
"What do you mean?"
She shook her head. "Just stop. Your name is known in biotech circles. The Quiet Investigations of USAMRA.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?